Welcome to the Intercut Podcast channel, where we're recapping the 2024 Golden Globes, the 81st annual Golden Globes Awards ceremony. I am your co-host, Zachary Shevich, and joining me, he only found out he got the job 10 days ago. It's Arturo Zurita.
10 minutes ago, he let me know we're about to do this Golden Globes recap. I'm like, what? What's going on? Yeah, went through the Wikipedia, and I think we're more prepared than Joe Coy.
Yeah, I think you got to be able to think on your feet for a job like that, unlike some people, right?
A comedian should know comedy? Yeah, maybe. Maybe.
We are talking about the big award show to kick off the season of award shows. It's going to be a couple months of SAG Awards and DGA Awards, and we got the Emmy Awards next week. But it all starts with the Golden Globes, which in many ways is almost like an audition for the rest of award season. You know, we have our favorites, people who we think deserve to win the most. But the practical reality of award season means that we're going to be watching many award shows, with the Emmys next week, with the Oscar nominations coming a week after that. So, Arturo, after last night's Golden Globes, I'm curious, which winners do you most want to see give another four or five speeches this award season? This is probably the, like, Kihi Kwan Memorial Award because of how many damn speeches he had to give last year.
True. Let's see. Since the Globes do what a lot of other awards don't do, which is also include TV, I would love to hear from the Succession people as they finally wrap it up. I think hearing from Kieran has been pretty funny, especially since this is like the first set of wins that he's getting. Getting the Globe is one thing, but hopefully getting that Emmy speech, that'll be one thing. Mm-hmm. But in terms of movies, I want to keep hearing Christopher Nolan talk. It is absurd to me that this man, who is synonymous with a freaking sound when it comes to trailers, that was the first time we saw him up there. Like, his only speech has been at, what, the Nick Slime Time Choice Awards? Like, that's crazy to think that he's never been awarded. When they announced him and he went up there, they said, this is his sixth nomination and first win. Like, nah, he should be speaking more. And I also even liked when his wife, since she's producer, Emma went up there and kind of related back to him. Like, yeah, he should have been awarded a long time ago. This feels like due justice after so many years of him kind of being snubbed and even being the reason for why some categories have gotten more nominations. So definitely him, a lock in for him. The surprise one, though, I will say this. It's going to be interesting to hear, you know, whatever Killian's going to do, whatever Divine's going to do. Damn, no one's going to give a better speech than Robert Downey, huh? That man oozes Christmas. Like, he left a trail going up there.
Yeah, I mean, there's a reason they centered the MCU around him. That man is, like, radiating charm and just, like, pops off the screen. He just is so – the voice just carries you, right? He's so effortless. I'm definitely happy to see Robert Downey Jr. give as many speeches as possible, even if I don't necessarily know if he's my choice in that category.
Right?
But there's lots of people that I'm give happy the best to speeches. Hear – Yeah, you know who I really enjoyed hearing from last night was also Paul Giamatti. I think Paul's got like the sort of like doesn't really give that much of a shit anymore energy.
Yeah.
That's fun at award shows. You know, he's been through this cycle before, and I think he's like a little he doesn't need the accolades, right? He's just kind of there for the free drinks or whatever.
You saw what he did afterwards, right?
Yeah. I mean, that's my kind of guy after my heart, going to an In and Out immediately with your Golden Globe.
That's funny. I would not have expected anything more from him.
Yeah. But somebody who was definitely ready for their moment is Lily Gladstone. Kind of had the whole, like, gravity of the situation perfectly pinpointed, you know.
Agreed.
Reminded us of the historical significance, threw in a little bit of Blackfoot dialect in there as well. She will definitely come with like a you know, a heavy hitter statement every time that she wins one of these awards. So I'd be happy to see her continue on this pathway.
Let me hit you with that one though. You're right with her being able to understand the moment and kill it with that speech, understanding the levity of it. Does a Golden Globe hold that for you, or does it need to be the Oscar?
I mean, I think a Golden Globe is right? kind of like the testing ground. It's like the putting the foot in the water, but it's mm-hmm. not really real until we get to the Oscars, right? Because this so you is get all, the gold. It's all part of the lead up to the big ceremony that happens in March. So
the spring training.
Yeah. We'll talk a bit about some of the winners and losers from last night's Golden Globe ceremony and also what that means for potentially their future awards success. Should we start with some of the winners? You want to start with some of the losers? How should we attack this?
We go winners, bro. Let's go.
Yeah. All right. All the glory first. Let's start it with TV, like you were saying, because Succession was the big award winner from the night. It took home the best drama show, best actor, best actress. And I think kind of notably in the one category where it was competing with The Bear, best supporting actor, it was Matthew McFadyen who won the Golden Globe and not Eben Moss-Bacharach. So, Art, are you happy with Succession going out as the champion in its final season?
Yeah, I thought they all gave really great performances, all gave really great speeches. Maybe in Best Actress, perhaps? I'd have to look at the grouping again there, but I think that may be the one category where it's just like, I'm happy Snook took it, but I think that was probably the strongest one out of all the other ones where Culkin, I was completely in. I'm still rooting for him for the Emmy. Mm-hmm. I can see supporting actor go multiple different ways, right? For sure. No problem there. But McFadyen was great. He probably has some of the most quotable lines that we had from the fourth season. And then also kind of spoiled the ending of Succession when he went up there, giving his new title. But hey, I like that. I think he won last year as well, if I'm not mistaken, because that was the year where I thought he was stronger. I think Culkin mm-hmm. was stronger this year than he was last year. But I'd still give him his due justice for sure.
Yeah, I mean, he still had quite a bit to do in this final season, and I know we were talking about this before, but that balcony scene between him and Sarah Snook's characters is just
easily
like some of the most riveting performances that I've ever seen on TV. So happy to see Matthew McFadyen take this one home. Happy to see Jesse Armstrong get up on stage one last time and talk about...
I'll wait, though. What happened there, dude? This man went up there last mm-hmm. minute, and goes, hey, nice to meet y'all. Where was he the entire show?
I mean, he's not a big name actor, so I think they got him sure. way in the back there. Okay. I don't know what it is. Maybe they needed to probably put the beef table closer to the stage too, because that they we'll were also taking a little while.
They had the beef table past customs all the way on the west wing yeah. of that auditorium, bro. That was ridiculous. It was a traffic jam to get up there.
Yeah, talking about Sarah Snook's window in Best Actress, I think this is a category that I actually kind of would have liked to have seen go to Emma Stone for her work on
saying.
The Curse. It's a really yes. incredible performance.
And you could even see it in her face right before they announced it. She was kind of yeah. like almost
surprised.
Dying it, like, this is going to be the double, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Which is not usually the case for Succession actors. They are used to feeling like the front runners. But, you know, I guess in a year with The Last of Us, with The Curse, with a lot of other stuff.
The Crown?
Yeah, but the thing is, the winners were pretty grouped together. All of the TV awards ended up going to either Succession, Beef. There was the, as you mentioned, one win for Elizabeth Debicki on The Crown, or mm-hmm. it went to our other best show winner for
yes,
musical or
sir.
Comedy, The Bear. They had the whole cast up on stage, Lionel accepting the award. Io got her flowers. Jeremy got his flowers. Were you happy to see The Bear, another one of our favorite shows from the past year, also take home this many Golden Globes?
Easily. I think Jeremy Allen White killed it. This would be for season two, right?
Yeah, interestingly, this is for season two, but I believe the Emmys that are next week are still for season one.
How?
Emmys got delayed. It's all stupid and backwards.
I don't understand that at all. But what I do know is that he previously already won one, if I'm not mistaken. So he is two for two, Jeremy Allen White, mm-hmm. for the same role. That's back-to-back ones. Last year, it was him and Ayo. They went up to announce, and their whole bit, if you recall, was them doing an audition about how tall they were and what they could perform as, because yep. they said all the casting people were in the room. Now look mm-hmm. at them. She was what? Your number one most viewed actress of 2023?
Yep.
And now she picked up her first gold, both of them winning together. That's awesome. Fantastic. Yeah. And then to have the boy Marcus come up and be the one who's chosen to speak. Beautiful.
I thought that was
like,
badass.
They made him the sous chef at that point, and he was able to carry it. I thought that they had the best ensemble on site. for out of all the people who were there.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's cool to see, like, basically the whole cast there, too, rather than, you know, just, like, the few famous players, I guess. I mean, it's maybe not every single person, but it's a lot of them, right? And I think they're also just, like, people who we've come to love and support so much. Like, Io is so endearing, and her speeches, I think her personality comes through so much. I mean, you know, it's hard to not root for a fellow Letterboxd poster, but, you know,
R.I.P. though. Great. No, I thought she quit.
She took her profile picture down, but I think she's still putting some things up. She's yeah, I don't know. We're
I thought the Irish joke was pretty
playing
funny.
Playing it safe.
She's playing it safe, right? She got that award.
Yeah.
She wins one thing, has got to lose another. But yeah, her letterbox has probably been one of the funnier ones out there. So we'll see. We'll see if she keeps that up.
Yeah. But The Bear, it's a really special show. And I think the ensemble is one of the key reasons why. So it's great to see.
Number one show of the year?
Yeah. I mean, I had two different number one shows on our two different lists, and it was Succession and The Bear. So I'm happy to see them both strongly represented in these categories for sure. The other big winner, the one that you were actually messaging me about, was Beef. The Globes ordered some turf on turf. They gave both Ali Wong and Steve Yeun the acting awards for limited series. And then they gave the award for best limited series to the show itself.
Awesome.
Art. Were you happy that Beef swept, or were you hoping to see some of the love spread around?
No, you just reminded me. I only messaged you one thing during the award show, and it was the word B-E-E-F.
Yep.
I was very excited. We've been talking about how for actress, she has pretty much been winning everything. And I thought she gave a beautiful speech. You know, there's a lot of behind the scenes about, you know, her husband's always been the butt of the jokes when it comes to her stand-up specials. They recently also kind of split, and now she's out there in the dating scene. Would I have ever guessed that it would have been Bill Hader to share that kiss for the win?
Very intimate kiss, too. Very tender.
Very tender kiss.
Yeah.
And then to also still shout out her husband for babysitting. So, I mean, that was beautiful all around. Like, to still give him the due credit for her being able to be out there to do the stuff that she does. I thought it was an excellent performance from her. Looking at the other actresses who were nominated for that list, I obviously really liked Rachel Weisz for Dead Ringers. Juno Temple has been fantastic in Fargo. She earned it with Beef. My worry, as you know, has been Steven Yeun has not been getting the recognition I thought he deserved, especially with all the other award shows. Finally came in here, snatched it up, rightfully so. And even when it comes to limited series overall, right? What else was in competition this
All the Light We Cannot See, Daisy Jones and the Six, Fargo, Fellow Travelers, Lessons in Chemistry.
Nah, it's Beef, you know it. Swarm should have been in there, but it's Beef. So I was very, very happy with that. And I thought it was a good even split. I don't think anyone monopolized too much. Like, I wouldn't really consider it too many sweeps when there's, like, one missing. So Succession getting, like, its corner of nobody I would argue against. The Bear getting its corner. And then Beef as well. I thought it was evenly split between those three.
Yeah, I mean, I think there'll be people who will argue that Barry should have gotten some love.
Which one? Where?
I mean, I think you can make an argument of him against Jeremy Allen White for sure. I don't know if I would go with Bill Hader over Jeremy Allen White, but I think it's an argument.
So we ain't having it.
I mean, it's other the nominations. People will. I'm saying what other people might say.
And those people, I hope we're having a good Monday.
Yeah. The other thing you might say is that maybe like a show like Abbott Elementary should have done better, considering that The Bear isn't that much of a comedy. But again, like
talk about that. That's interesting, I mean, too.
We say that it's a division between comedy and drama, but really it's a division between one-hour shows and half-an-hour shows. And those have just traditionally been, if they're an hour long, they're dramas, and if they're half an hour long, they're comedies. But in the age of streaming, those walls are eroding, so now The Bear gets to be a comedy and compete against Abbott Elementary and Jury Duty in for acting awards.
Two things. One, can you name me funnier lines out of Succession or funnier lines out of The Bear season 2, Zach?
Oh, easily Succession. I got like 10 more quotable lines from Succession than The Bear.
2. Ain't Jury Duty really funny, and James Marsden maybe should have snatched it from him?
I'm not sure they should be in the same category at all, but that's a whole
other
thing.
It's a little different. Yeah, it is a little different, but for comedy's sake, Jury Duty's kind of surprising, right?
Yeah, it's funny. It's very funny.
It's very funny.
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't know. I'm always team, like, spread the love around. But at the same time, like, I think Succession and The Bear are two particularly special shows. So, I don't know. I wouldn't take any of those awards from them.
Yeah.
And Beef is definitely the best of the nominated miniseries.
Do you see a shakeup happening for the Emmys? Because obviously the Golden Globe is cute, but really what they're aiming for is the Emmys. This tends to be in the streak of things. Emmys happen in the fall. That's a real award. And then they're just like partying. It's like an after show for a lot of these seasons that may have ended to still hang out with each other. Emmys is still around the corner for Succession, for The Bear, whatever seasons they may be. That's the real award that they put up on the mantle. Do you think anything's going to shift for that?
I would suspect that perhaps Beef won't do as strongly at the Emmys. I think it'll still pick up some. Maybe, like you said, it'll be Ali and not Steven there.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the other thing is that the Emmys are just, they have more categories, right? They split their supporting actor categories. They have guest actor categories, those which were actually given out this weekend, which we'll talk about later. I think it'll just be that because it's only TV and not just sort of shoehorning in a few TV categories, that it won't feel like so top heavy, even though I still suspect that the winners will be Succession and The Bear.
They also do comedy, right? And drama?
Yeah, they do a split between comedy and drama. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I see it kind of being the same as well.
Yeah, maybe The Last of Us will be a bit of a bigger threat at the Emmys, but I don't know. Still feel like Succession is going to reign king.
Okay. I'm excited.
Some more big winners from last night, as we were talking about earlier. Oppenheimer and Emma Thomas coming to the stage to accept Best Picture. It was one of five wins that Oppenheimer had on the night,
beautiful,
including Christopher Nolan for Best Director, Robert Downey Jr. for Best Supporting Actor in a really competitive field, Cillian Murphy for Best Actor in a Drama, Ludwig for Score, and then the fifth is the Best Picture win. So Oppenheimer leaves the Golden Globes with all the momentum in the world heading into awards season. And I kind of feel like we've known this since July, and we've entertained these other movies, but I think people who are denying it are just like not looking at reality right now. This is Oppenheimer's award season. It's in the front runner seat. I think it's going to take home at least three of the big awards, if not more. I just really don't see anything being a threat to it in picture, maybe in director, if they want to do some kind of like Scorsese celebration thing, but I think this is Chris Nolan's year. Like you mentioned, we haven't seen him on this stage, and he's such an icon. It's such like a, you know, notable auteur. And I think it's just his time.
I'm flipped on it.
Yeah.
I'm still not sure if Oppenheimer takes Best Picture. Don't get me wrong. I'm completely for it. They said it wouldn't make money. It's nearing a bill. They said it wouldn't be getting these awards. It's getting these awards. For me, I think it needs to be a lock for Best Director.
Yeah.
I think the award and the honor should go to Christopher Nolan. There's no better place than for that. When he won the directing last night, I was like, damn, that feels right. Like, it's so weird to see him finally accept a piece of gold. It doesn't matter what the piece of gold is. It should definitely be the Oscar, though. Whether it's for writing, whether it's for directing, whether it's for Best Picture, out of all three, I think the best one to get it for is for the thing that he does best. It's him being the man behind the camera. It's the director. I want to see him give that speech over him getting nominated or even winning for the movie. I'd be okay seeing Killers, Snatch movie, or a surprise hit. But to me, that's what Oppenheimer deserves the most. It's Christopher Nolan's recognition for his directing. Even over Scorsese's, who I think went toe-to-toe with him.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But that's where my lock is in. As well as Killers. I
mean, as much
and
as,
Score.
Yeah, and as much as I love Killers
and
of the
VFX.
As much as I love Killers of the Flower Moon, I don't think there's anybody out there arguing that it's Scorsese's best movie. I got it, you know, number five or number six, maybe. But, you
five,
know,
six,
best
what?
Movie on Scorsese's best movies, Killers of the Flower Moon.
This late in the game making a number five movie, that's
crazy,
though.
Nothing to shake a finger at, but as for Christopher Nolan, like, there's an argument to be made that Oppenheimer is his best movie. I'm not sure that's my pick for his best movie, but it certainly is up there. And it's also, like, the rare film from him that deals with, like, a real human situation, a period of history, you know? So I think that combination, it makes it hard to look elsewhere than him this awards season. So I don't know. I have them... both the film and him as director as the strong front runners heading into the rest of the award season. But
you have someone else for score?
No, I kind of think it's going to win score. I think it's going to, the ones that I think it's going to win right now are picture, score, supporting director. Actor, original screenplay,
supporting
and score. Yeah. I think it's winning. I think it's Robert Downey Jr.'s year to lose.
Whoa.
Look, he won the Globe.
All right. And he gave the best speech possible. Look, Melton goes up there. It's going to be the most attractive dude up there. Downey goes – or sorry, De Niro goes up there. It's going to be the most political speech. Who else we got? Ruffalo?
Ruffalo. It's also probably political. He's the most likely to say ceasefire now.
Who's the fifth one we got?
It's not Willem Dafoe, is it?
Bro, they put up a picture of Willem Dafoe, of him in the makeup
The
makeup.
Gosling.
And for a second, I didn't know which one to look at. He's supporting. Gosling is supporting?
Yeah, he's supporting.
Robert Downey Jr. is giving the best speech. That's all I know.
Yeah.
But he already has an Oscar, no?
Does he have an Oscar?
I know he's nominated for a role.
He was nominated for Chaplin, and he was nominated for Tropic Thunder, but I don't think he won for either.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah.
And that would be a good one to see him snatch up. I think he's really great in it. I would not be upset. I was not upset when he won yesterday. I still think it's a very stacked competition there.
Yeah. It's not for over. Me, like, there's still tons of campaigning to do, and the speeches, I think, are going to play a role in it, too. But I think the fact that he is so beloved, particularly because he's this intensely successful actor that so many people have this big relationship to, not just through his work as Iron Man, but all the stuff that he did prior to Iron Man. True. And that it's kind of, in a way, this is sort of like his time award. He's really good in the movie.
And on that, isn't that better? That Nolan isn't getting his for The Revenant. He's getting it for something as cool as Oppenheimer. Yes.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the thing.
That's it's awesome.
Like, yeah. It's a rare situation where the whole, like, it's time narrative seems to be lining up with actually this is a great performance and maybe one of the best of his career. I did think it was interesting when he pointed out during his speech the whole idea that, like, this is a whole subtler version of Robert Downey Jr. as if people are, like, grading his performance on a curve. But there is some of that baggage, too, because it's such a different thing than what we're used to seeing him do.
I liked when Strauss looked at the camera and said, I love you, 3000. That was one of the best dialogue scenes in Oppenheimer. But hey, very good night for Oppenheimer. I'm a little iffy on this next category that I know you're using for a transition. I don't know if it's got it.
Yeah, I mean, Anatomy of a Fall definitely got one of the biggest boosts of the night, winning not just one, but two Golden Globes, the best non-English language film, even though there is quite a bit of English language in it, and the best screenplay award. That's the one that is really surprising because it was up in a category not just against Christopher Nolan and Oppenheimer, but Greta Gerwig and Barbie. And I believe the holdover script was nominated too. I could be wrong about that, but like some pretty strong screenplays in there. And yet the Hollywood Foreign Press Association decides to go with Justine Triet.
They're not the HFPA anymore, my sir. Oh,
right. Thank you for the correction.
When that hit me on the second time, Alina looks at me and goes, what are they saying? And we both looked at each other and realized they just rebranded the HFPA to Globes Journalists?
Yeah, it's a very Hollywood Creative Alliance type of move, if you ask me. But
if you ask me, the best presenter was Will Ferrell going out there saying the Golden Globes haven't changed a bit. What a way to just get to that line. But yeah, keep going. Because another thing with the script is it's both original and adapted. They don't split it here.
Yeah, that's the thing. So it's... not just that they won screenplay, but they did it in a combined category. Seems to suggest that there is a lot of love not for this movie and for this script. in a way that I think should be considered when it comes time to the Oscars, because I have honestly been like underplaying the idea of Anatomy of Fall as a real contender, particularly after France decided to go with The Taste of Things instead of Anatomy of a Fall. Like, that sort of takes away the one nomination you can count on. But people are really responding to this movie. I think now that it's on VOD, also a lot of people are catching up with it and really diving into the film. I think it's got a real shot to wind up getting a couple Oscar nominations. And we've seen with the expanded Academy that has a lot more international members that some international films do break through. Like All Quiet on the Western Front got, what was it, like 6 Oscar nominations last year?
And wins. Like, that was a big part of it. It was snatching up things that we thought were going to go to other people. To run it back for screenplay, besides Anatomy, it was also Barbie, Poor Things, Oppenheimer, Killers of the Flower Moon, and Past Lives, no holdovers.
All right, but still, those are some heavy hitters there in terms of screenplays. Very heavy hitters.
And I know we're going to be talking about it more for the Oscars later, but this one would 100% fall in original, correct?
I believe so, yeah, as far as I know.
All right. So that's gonna be a tough one for Oppenheimer, I can tell you that much. Non-English also, does that put you at odds with some of the other ones that you may have had at the top of the list? Because obviously it won't be in competition for international feature because it's not eligible at the Oscars for international feature. But up against something like... the only two I'd count here is Society of the Snow and Zone of Interest, because you and I don't count Past Lives in this category. I know you didn't care for Fallen Leaves as much, but like, is Anatomy of the Fall going to take the thunder that Zone of Interest should have had, because they did such a weird rollout that it's not even out in theaters for many people right now?
Like this, no other movie got the boost from the Golden Globes that it might have helped it. I don't know. I feel like Zone of Interest is kind of at a level that it's almost undeniable. Like it is such a big, well-received movie that I can't imagine it getting snubbed. I don't know really if this hurts any movie, but it definitely, you know, it's just weird because it doesn't help Anatomy of a Fall get into foreign film because it legally cannot or whatever.
Yeah, so it's fighting a different battle for the Oscars.
Yeah.
I will say for Zone of Interest, I think you guys may have it already over in New York. They're premiering it at the Alamo Drafthouse, and I need you to picture that.
I can't wait for a waiter to deliver me some chicken tenders in the middle of discussing the way to optimize the incinerator.
Ridiculous, right? Yeah. Getting your order in while the sounds of the first minute are just drowning out everything. I don't understand that. Please play it at a different theater. But we'll see. It's going to be a completely different field when it comes to international film there. But good for Anatomy of a Fall. I like that the whole cast was out there. Mm-hmm. The boy they were saying needs to be Adam Driver Jr. Agree completely.
Yeah.
That boy did a great job in the movie. The dog did a great job in the movie. Everybody did a great job.
Love the Snoops. Definitely need to get Snoop on stage at the Oscars.
Yes. Bro, I thought she forgot 50 Cent's name.
That would have been funny, but no.
It was randomly, a dog, yeah.
Randomly, though, speaking of that 50 Cent instrumental cover, that new Michelle Yeoh show, Brother's Son, also uses the exact same cover. It's just having a moment. P.I.M.P.
Wow.
Okay. Just bringing it back.
You caught? Is the show good?
It's fine.
Crazy.
I caught one episode of it. Anyway, another winner from last night, Poor Things, which snatched the awards for Best Picture, Comedy or Musical, and Best Actress in a Comedy or Musical. That latter award in particular, I think, is interesting and kind of puts Emma Stone on a battle path with Lily Gladstone for the Oscar. You know, there was maybe some potential here for a Margot Robbie to sneak through in Barbie, but it's just tough because I think that Emma Stone performance is so good and kind of the epitome of what she can do as an actress. It feels like this should be a crowning moment for her.
I agree, because I'm one who believes she should have taken the twofer. She should have gotten one for movie and one for TV, and that would have been a fantastic night for her to be able to flaunt that, because I think she's done the work for both. I mean, you and I even know she's got a short out there that she was also campaigning. She was doing anything possible after having a child to have one of the craziest comeback years. And I think she should have swept every award. Looking at the comedy actress and the drama actress, I know we have Lily as the winner for Killers of the Flower Moon.
Yeah.
Emma Stone as winner for Poor Things. I thought this was a lock-in for her. I'm surprised for the category win of Best Picture Comedy. We'll get to that. But just sticking to actress right here, we have 10 nominees here. I'm going to name them to you. You tell me if it's a shoo-in for nom. You tell me if it's a boot. Lily Gladstone.
Shoo-in.
Annette Bening. I'm sorry. I have to. It's on the list.
Yeah, I'm going to say no, but weirder things have happened.
Sandra Hüller, Anatomy of Fall.
I'm starting to think it's going to happen. Especially given
it has to.
Yeah, especially given how well it did last night. I think it's going to happen.
Hashtag did she do it is a strong campaign right now. I'll just tell you that much.
Yeah.
Greta Lee.
This is one I'm worried is going to get bounced. And it's really hope not because I love that performance. But I would say right now, I think she's not getting in.
Whoa, that's going to be a tough one. Did you see her speech at the critics, I believe?
Yeah, it was excellent.
Epic speech. Fantastic speech. I feel like they might round her out at six. Carey Mulligan.
I think she gets in, and this is the slot that if I had my say, even though I like that Carey Mulligan performance a lot, I'd give it to Greta.
Yeah, you and I think, are the very few who are appreciative of Carey Mulligan's performance. A lot of people hate her. I've had a lot of white folk complain on Latinos' behalf for her. We appreciate it. We do. But we like Carrie. She's not Chilean, but she's not bad in the movie. It's not her fault. Or maybe it is, but she still did good. Greta Lee, I would pick as well. I agree with you. So you're giving it to Carrie as a third spot. Mm-hmm. Maybe Greta. Kaylee Spaney as Priscilla?
Nah, I think that ship sailed.
Booted? Okay. Emma Stone.
I don't think Priscilla's getting anything at the Oscars.
I'm going to count that one for you already right off the bat. We're left with one more, and we're barely starting the comedy section right here, Zach. You just saw Fantasia and the Color Purple.
Yes.
Right?
I liked her. I don't think she makes the cut.
Jennifer Lawrence.
Not for no hard feelings. Not at the Oscars. That's a Golden Globes performance for sure.
So then you're arguing with me, because I'm not going to count the Fallen Leaves actress, Alma. You're arguing me between Fantasia and the Color Purple, Natalie Portman in May, December, and Margot Robbie as Barbie.
Mm-hmm. And I might go with Natalie Portman personally, but I think because of the success of Barbie, particularly because Margot Robbie is also producer on that movie too. Yeah, Natalie Portman produced May December, but it wasn't as successful as Barbie. I think this is going to be a Margot Robbie spot. She is so great in Barbie too.
Yeah, she is really good. She is.
Yeah.
I'd go Emma Stone at my top pick. Lily Gladstone, Sandra Hüller, Nat, because we were close like that. Fantasia, then Margot.
Ooh,
then Greta.
Okay,
it's just too stacked. You and I have been saying make it bigger.
Yeah, let's get eight nominees. That'd feel a little bit more reasonable.
All right. So, in terms of comedy, though, it winning the comedy thing, did that not surprise you?
Poor Things taking the Best Picture for comedy
over May, December, The Holdovers, and Barbie. Bro, that's pretty big. That's pretty big.
I thought it had a good shot. I thought it was going to be between The Holdovers and Poor Things, but it felt like there was a lot of momentum going The Holdovers' way, and there still is, but it feels like maybe May, December has more. Poor Things has more.
That's interesting.
I think the people who love... I think the difference maybe is that the people who love Poor Things, like, love the hell out of it. Like, there's people...
We do.
Yeah. I don't know. The people who put it on the top of their lists are like just really being champions of that movie in a way that I think carries through to award support.
Over Barbie? Barbie whined and dined everybody, though.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. That's the old school Globes. Like, if this was the mid-2000s, Barbie probably would have won that category. But I guess they're trying to maintain a cleaner image now. Barbie to me feels like a movie that, and we'll get into this more in a second, but it feels to me like the movie that gets nominated for 10 Oscars but only wins one. Like The Irishman or The Roma of this year.
Barbie?
Barbie.
You saw Barbie actually broke the record for the most Critic Choice nominations, and then you realize that the Critics Choice are who threw the most parties with them?
Yep.
Ridiculous. Yeah, I mean, it did get two, though, right? It got a...
Yes.
what did it get?
So it got the original song Golden Globe, rightfully which so. Went yes, to Billie so. Eilish for what? As it should. What was I made for? And it got the Best Cinematic and Box Office Achievement Award.
Yes.
Uh-huh. Now, granted, I think this is like the correct winner in that category because
really.
Well, look, I think what I understand the award to be is the most financially successful movie that's also good. And it was the most financially successful movie of last year, and it was also good.
But what if you have a gooder movie cinematically? Does that compete against the box office?
No, because this is a box office achievement.
And cinematic. Cinematic and box office. Can one have a higher here, not a lower there?
So how does Oppenheimer it go? Should have won this, or is this an Eras Tour argument?
I'm just saying, if you're going to invite Taylor Swift, get her up on stage. I don't want to see her trending on Twitter because they're talking smack about Timothy Chalamet. I need her to speak. I need her up there.
Yeah.
For me, Barbie is this, right? It's a toy movie that ended up making $1 billion.
Yeah.
Back in my day, we used to call that Transformers.
But this is better than Transformers. Come on.
I'm not saying it's not better than Transformers. I'm just saying box office wise, it's the same thing.
Yeah.
I hope to keep this category forever.
You like this category?
I hope they do a spin-off award show for cinematic box office achievement.
Yeah, we can call it the box office report, right?
We can publish it every Monday
in Variety.
Forbes leads it.
Oh, God.
All right, let's talk about your favorite movie.
No, I was just going to say, though, with Barbie, I mean, it was the most nominated movie at the Globes last night, but ultimately it was the Heimer half of Barbenheimer that ended up taking home the most awards.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. All right, let's talk about my last winner for the evening. It is The Holdovers, and yes, it is partially because of this look that Dominic Sessa debuted. I'd be lying if I didn't clean. It didn't like speak to Caitlin in certain ways. he's looking very, very like Julian Casablancas-esque there, like a member, member of the Strokes.
Yeah, they want to cast this boy as Bob Dylan already just off of the pictures he took off the red carpet. Zach, if I see you strolling in to Sundance like that, you got to let me know. We'll go matching. We'll be the Cecil boys.
Oh, man, I'll buy the outfit now. But yeah, it was a big night for the acting from The Holdovers as well, because I think everybody had anticipated that Divine Joy Randolph might win, given that she's been sweeping, just absolutely sweeping the critics' nominations. But getting the dual win with Paul Giamatti was a nice boost for the film as well.
I agree. And supporting his fact also there.
Do you feel like there's anybody who's really competing against Divine Joy Randolph at this point?
Award-wise, no. True competition. Mm-hmm. After all is said and done and we look back, I think we will appreciate Julianne Moore's performance a lot.
Yeah.
I know we were kind of split on Danielle Brooks. I also do think Danielle Brooks was really good in the role as well. Mm-hmm. But the way that Divine gave that speech yesterday about the little inner moments of a bunch of people who are heard and that these are their stories to be told up on screen, I think showcases why it's impacted a lot of people. I have no problem with her winning. She is the heart of that movie. And just looking at the entire awards show, I hope she has a killer speech to give at the Oscars because it's hers to lose.
Yeah, absolutely. I think I agree that it's hers to lose. And if last night is an audition for your eventual Oscars speech, she absolutely nailed it. Like, she's going to be
beautiful speech.
She's going to be great on that stage. So yeah, I kind of can't imagine anybody beating Divine Joy Randolph, even though I agree with you that Julianne Moore performance is so incredible. It's so incredible that I keep seeing people who are like, she's the lead of that movie. And if you literally look at the screen time, she's in about 25% of that movie, but you can't stop thinking about her.
It's great, dude. It's great. Yeah. It's one of my favorite performances of the year.
Paul Giamatti ended up taking home the Globe over Timothy Chalamet, Nicolas Cage, okay. Matt Damon, right. Joaquin Phoenix. I think the real kind of competitor there is Jeffrey Wright for American Fiction. And he did.
And he was the happiest.
Kinda, yeah, I mean, it just seems like this is going to be the end of, like, the hopes for Jeffrey Wright winning. But hopefully he gets at least into the nominees.
Yeah, Jeffrey Wright is working on a completely different level for that, for sure. But he was the happiest when he heard Paul's name get called out. He was there. He was not doing there was a couple of reactions that we got from last night. He was not pulling the maestro. I will just say that. He did not. he did not pull a Bradley Cooper just straightforward and just did the little clap.
I feel like Jeffrey Wright and Paul Giamatti have had very similar trajectories as these, like, very reliable but underused character actors who have the gravitas to lead films but often are just supporting players in them. So there must be a little bit of, like, recognition in each other.
Between the two, yeah, they respect their craft for sure. They both seem like people who understand each other in that sense. They were probably the only ones who also laughed at the character actor joke that Joe Coy decided to make at the top of the show. Let's just get that one out of the way.
You want to skip to Joe Coy?
Just to get it out right here, why not?
This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Because we're at the minute mark on our podcast where he had completely disappeared from the show. Yo, this man got raptured midway through the ceremony. He bombed so hard in that opening. And you and I, we know our comedians well enough to know that this wasn't a schmuck that came out of nowhere. This is a man who's built his career to make it all the way to the top. Some people don't recognize him. They thought he was the waiter. No, Joe Coy is a world-renowned comedian.
Absolutely.
Filipino roots. He comes in. I was rough, bro.
It was
and
really rough.
He's been
rough.
At it for a little bit.
Yeah, I've never seen someone bomb their award show monologue that bad. I mean, I really wasn't a fan of Hasan Minhaj's Indie Spirit Award monologue, but at least it was like jokes. Like, it had the construction of jokes.
Failed,
there was
delivery
and punchline. It kind of just felt like Joe Coy was talking about stuff. Like, it was so poorly rehearsed and poorly assembled and just unpracticed, I would say. I don't know. It's funny because, like, yeah, he's a comedian who has a lot of experience. He's like he's constantly touring, right? He's not like looking for, he doesn't need more of an audience, right? He's filling the places he books. I've known
that's
him for a long
time. No, that's a great point. Yes. He wasn't here as like a favor.
Yeah.
He was there as a favor. Like, he doesn't need it. I know people don't know him and they think he was just some person that they got. He's good on his own.
Yeah. I mean, look, I found out about him first through my friend Ben, who you know, who's a Filipino-American. So obviously there's like that Filipino connection there. And Joe is a performer who like really leans on that aspect in his comedy. Yeah. And I think one of the things he kind of ran into here was like the struggle with crossing over, right? Like he didn't have the ability to do any of his usual bits. And he tried to play in a different arena that he was less familiar with. And he didn't have the material. Like he had a joke about how Oppenheimer is 3 hours long, as if that isn't a thing that's been discussed ad nauseum already. He's treating it like it's this obscure art house movie and not something that made $1 billion at the box office and that the DVDs are flying off the shelves for. This isn't The Power of the Dog.
He had a joke about Killers of the Flower Moon that belittled it with him clearly not having seen Killers of the Flower Moon.
Yeah.
Saying it directly to Martin Scorsese's face while trying to suck off Robert De Niro. That was embarrassing. One thing that you and I hate the most out of comedians is have some respect for the movies.
That's the
when
thing,
you have no
right?
respect for the movies and the punchline you're doing against them is also not funny. How?
And it's he was doing this thing where he was like stating something that's a fact, but trying to deliver it like it's a joke and then being surprised that nobody laughed at it. I don't know. I mean,
yeah, he did that Margot Robbie one where he thought, I fell in love with a plastic doll. And everyone's like, this is uncomfortable. And the delivery was so botched that by the time he went, ha ha ha, I was looking at Ryan Gosling. Nobody cared, bro. You had Harrison Ford rolling his eyes. It was a mess. I'll tell you what's worse. It's not because he couldn't cross over. I saw Easter Sunday, his movie.
Mm-hmm.
I saw him on the Netflix improv thing where everyone came prepared. This was just a stand-up that they did last fall. He has this thing where he thinks that he is so God. Like, God has blessed him completely. All of his talents are God-given. That he doesn't try anymore when he goes up there. He thinks it's just supposed to flow through him.
Right.
And nothing pisses me off more than taking for granted the opportunities that you have and butchering your comedy. This man did an immortal sin in comedy. He brought up how many times, Zach? I didn't write these jokes. No.
Throwing his writers under
you
the bus.
You don't throw the writers under the bus. Because you should barely even be admitting that other people writing your jokes. If I could speak, I was so disappointed by Joe Coy.
Yeah.
So disappointed.
It was embarrassing. It was genuinely embarrassing in a way that, like, award shows sometimes can be embarrassing, but not this. Like, it's going to have an adverse effect on his career, I think. But I don't know, man.
I don't think anyone tunes in like that for any of this, but it was pretty bad. After last year, what Gerard did, which was completely different, right? That was giving them a spanking. He said he got hired 10 days, like you mentioned.
Yeah.
Nobody wanted to do this gig.
No, but see, here's the thing, though. It's like, ideally, the gig goes well. In most cases, it's forgettable, right? Like, some people don't even remember that they hosted award shows. He's now got a reputation as the guy who completely bombed the Golden Globes. There's a lot of people who are going to be like, oh, that guy from now on.
It's also the jokes that he made, right? Because, like you're saying, a big population is going to see him as that. You just ticked off the Swifties. The Swifties hate him after last night. That one reaction she did after that NFL joke about cutting away. First of all, he couldn't even complete the joke. Second, they cut to her and she's rolling her eyes. So now everybody's saying that when she was taking a picture, she was calling him an asshole. Like this jerk right here. A lot of bad eyes from a lot of people who saw you for the first time.
I just don't get how, as a comedian, you don't have a joke in your back pocket about bombing worse than Oppenheimer. But anyway, we can move on to some of the other losers from the evening, which included, as you mentioned, Maestro.
Stop.
And
bro.
Bradley Cooper.
There are other competitors.
There are a lot of cutaways to Bradley Cooper making this exact expression, just sort of like trying to hide the discomfort behind a smile. And I think sometimes people read too much into the whole, like, Bradley Cooper's trying really hard to get an Oscar thing.
Nah, he is, but, bro. He is.
But it was so set up perfectly for it last night.
Bro, you and I like Maestro.
Mm-hmm.
I'm still laughing at every Bradley Cooper meme that comes out. It is. It's funny. Everybody just loved him for A Star Is Born, right? Y'all change your tune really quick. That's why I'll laugh at the jokes with everybody. But when has it ever mattered that someone wanted an Oscar that much? Laugh at the thirst that he has. But I'm not going to sit here and say that it was a bad performance or that he's a bad actor, because he's a very good actor. Mm-hmm. I saw him still smile after he lost to Killian. He's a pretty good actor in my book.
Yeah, I don't know, man. I mean, it'll happen eventually for him, I'm sure, but definitely not on this go around. Another film that went home with zero wins was Past Lives. I wonder if we're at the point in the Past Lives campaign, despite it sort of being the unanimous choice for best movie from the first half of 2023, that it's just kind of like going to be happy to get a few nominations, you know, sneak into screenplay and picture and maybe actress. But I don't feel like Celine Song should be expecting to go home with any Oscars gold.
No, but it's the Gotham's, Indies, New York Critics Circles.
Yeah.
It's got all the press circles, so it's got that prestige for it. So for what the movie was kind of designed for, if you want to say it that way, I think it already fulfilled what it needed to.
Totally. I mean, it's an A24 movie that didn't have a big budget or anything, so it is already punching way above its weight class. And
for sure,
the thing that matters is that people have really connected with it. It's a great movie. So
it's been recognized at least, right? That's the important part.
Yeah. I think we harbored a suspicion that it might make its way all the way to the Oscars stage, and I just don't know if it's going to do that, but I'll be really happy
when it gets a couple...
No. That's why I said stage.
Oh, okay. Right? Okay. Like, gotcha. Gotcha.
Yeah.
Gotcha,
yeah.
Gotcha.
I still think it'll get a couple noms, and I'll be really happy for it there.
I gotcha. Yeah.
Yeah.
It'll still make it. That in and of itself is a feat. I truly believe that. It's an honor just to be nominated. So.
Absolutely. Was Killers of the Flower Moon a loser last night? It was nominated for a few awards, but the only one it picked up was Lily Gladstone. You mentioned that you think it has a shot in Best Picture. Do you feel like less confident in that after the Golden Globes?
It comes out on Friday on Apple TV Plus. I think people are finally going to have a resurgence talking about it. Mm-hmm. I see people breaking down the ending now as if it hasn't been already broken down since week one, but nobody wanted to hear it.
Right.
So I think it's only going to build in its campaign. I think it's going to build in its importance. I think it's going to still be my lock-in for picture. Nolan can take director, and it's just going to be up for Lily Gladstone versus
Emma Stone.
Emma. For poor things.
Yeah, that'll Battle be really of the Stones, I guess. I didn't just realize that.
Kind of, yeah. That. Gladstone versus Stone. Okay. That'd be fun.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I don't want to... I think sometimes in the whole, like, Oscar punditry thing, people want to take one awards body voting and extrapolate that to mean, like, this is what everybody's thinking. So, yeah, like, Killers didn't win that much at the Golden Globes, but the Oscars and other award shows, yeah, they're awarding a more vast part of the film experience, right? There's no production design Golden Globe. There's no costume design Golden Globe and stuff like that. So I still think that Killers is one of the major players, and it still could be a factor in the Best Picture race for sure.
I'm also arguing for supporting.
I'm also
just saying...
What, Kara or something?
Who are we talking supporting.
About? Oh, De Niro.
De Niro.
Okay, okay.
He killed it.
Yeah, that'd be cool. I mean, I can't choose, man. Supporting's too hard, man. I can't choose. Don't make me choose. My last loser of the evening was a winner because my loser is Ricky Gervais. Okay. Can we talk about that clip that they used for Armageddon? Was that Ricky Gervais or was that Tim Heidecker doing a parody of a right-wing comedian? Like, what is going on with Ricky Gervais's career?
Yes. So I saw that entire special because it got nominated before it was released. And
what'd you think?
I am so tired of comedians trying to explain comedy to you. Just do the comedy.
Right?
It was better than his last one. His last one was egregious. This one was fine. He does better with crowd work.
Yeah, I guess.
No, when you think about it, nobody tells you that Ricky Gervais set. They tell you what? When he hosted an award show.
Right?
They do.
Yeah. I've never really responded to his stand-up material. Like, he's a fantastic
a bunch of people
writer,
in the room
obviously.
Clapping.
Like, look at the shows that he's helped spawn. But yeah, like, it's so self-indulgent and so self-congratulatory, because when he isn't complaining about, like, the things you can't say, but I said them, he's also,
for the
like...
fifth time, right?
He's also, like, blowing smoke up his own ass about the shows he's made.
Yeah, like, nah, just... again, I just think he does better crowd work than he does comedy. Because a lot of comedians right now are not doing comedy. They're just doing reaction talks.
Yeah.
That's weird to me.
Yeah. So good for him, I can't believe that those were the I can't believe that those were the nominees for the first stand-up Golden Globe. But
yeah, I was so confused when they... Go ahead.
Just the biggest joke is that he won it. Like, that's maybe the worst one they could have picked.
But it was such a bad category. You and I had a pick that didn't even make it.
Yeah.
Also on Netflix, that should have been the one that got nominated.
John Mulaney, yeah.
Yeah, everybody else here was rough. Like, the Wanda Sykes one wasn't even funny. She just recapped what happened since 2020. Like, what? I didn't really understand that.
Yeah,
but
I saw lots of people responding to that latest Nate Bargatze special. Like, why isn't that up there?
Hell yeah, bro. Nate's been funny. They even got him on SNL. I don't know. There was a lot of standards from last year that they could have put on there. They decided to do that. I did find it funny that I guess after they got just mopped last year with a comedian, they decided, I think you tweeted this, very few categories actually got snippets. And it was like they were stroking the ego of the comedians.
Yeah.
Here's a whole 30 seconds for a
Why
joke.
Why is this the category where we need to see clips for? Why can I see some of the acting nominees?
Yeah, I was both impressed. I'm like, for sure, honor comedians, but like, I'm sorry, why? Why don't we get any acting clips? It was very weird. Very weird. But who presented that one?
Jim Gaffigan, who reminded everybody that he's not a pedophile.
Hey, at least he didn't do his hot pockets bit against that.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm looking forward to that one.
Speaking of microwaved meals, my favorite part of that whole bit was when they introduced Jim Gaffigan as from the upcoming Netflix film Unfrosted, the Pop-Tart story. What is like, I know we're in the era of corpo biopics or whatever, but what is going on? That is a 30 Rock title if I've ever heard one.
Let me hit you one with one better, bro. The best presenter of the night, and I know you will agree, was Yellowstone himself. I don't know what happened between Kevin Costner and America Ferrera, but that was the absolute biggest bomb of the night.
Yeah.
Only because they didn't go for a monologue. Did what's his name not take the cake for the worst? But Kevin Costner literally shut her down. I don't know what the bit was supposed to be, but it went sideways.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, first of all, it was a bit that required him specifically quoting the dialogue from Barbie. But it feels like Kevin Costner just decided to not look at the teleprompter, which makes quoting dialogue a lot more difficult.
Right? And then everyone's seeing what he's supposed to say off the teleprompter, and he's just saying it weird, so they're all laughing at him, and he knows. So then she tries to ad-lib, and he literally just said, move on. The only thing funnier than that would have been, and I've been saying this for a minute, well, I'll say Kerry Russell and Ray Romano, solid bit.
Oh, that was a great bit. In fact, I want to mind that a little bit, because I was thinking about our issue with Joe Coy. You know, I found out he was hosting the Golden Globes when I tuned into them. I don't know if you had the same experience that I did. I had no idea they had picked him.
I found out 10 days ago. When did it happen? As I was like, why is this so late? So honestly, almost around the same time.
So I actually compiled a list of people who I thought might be better suited to host not just the Golden Globes, but the Oscars, because I don't think the Oscars have announced a host either yet. Or
I'm going to put it to you this way. Again. You're going to mention, I think it's Kimmel again.
I think you're right, but who wants to see Kimmel host yet another Oscars?
Nobody wants to see Kimmel again.
You're right, it is Kimmel again.
You're going to say two comedians who presented during this.
Yeah.
Please.
Well, no, I'm not going to say Kristen Wiig and Will Ferrell, if that's what you're thinking. Because
of course it's what I'm thinking.
As much as they would be perfect, as much as they absolutely kill every time they go up to present together, I kind of get the feeling that they would have done it by now if they wanted to. I think they might be a little bit too big for that gig, given that they are
they
both
just, yeah, they come into
movie
them
stars.
And go, you get out of here.
Do you like that bit? I thought it was really funny.
I think they kill every bit that they're in. I still quote the you get out of here bit with Meryl Streep. It's fantastic. And this new one was great too.
Yeah.
They joke on vibes.
Yeah. That's the thing. It's like just
they let
sort
it
of like the energy that they bring is funny in itself.
That
you don't even necessarily need like the jokes to be that clever. They just bring it.
They weren't even saying lines. They had the whole audience cracking up. All right. But hit me.
All right. My first pick is a duo, and I'm not so sure how familiar you are with both of them together, but you might know Bo and Yang from SNL. I picked the Los Culturistas duo of Bo and Yang and Matt Rogers. I think they're really funny. They also have that podcast, Los Culturistas. They're really firmly like absorbers of pop culture and commentators on it. Bo and Yang's got a letterbox that he keeps up with too. We need hosts who are funny and care about the movies. And I guarantee you that these guys would match that assignment.
Yeah. I can see Bo and Yang bringing that respectability to the craft itself.
Exactly. And they're Swifties. They would have had Taylor Swift jokes prepared that she wouldn't get mad about.
That would have
worked out. Yeah. All right, okay. Another pick I have is Nicole Byer, who, aside from hosting Netflix's Nailed It, also was the host of the Creative Arts Emmys not so long ago. So she has award show hosting experience. I think she's got like a fun, bubbly energy and just kind of can help pick the mood up in a way that is useful for an award show, particularly when you're getting into hour three, that her voice is going to just generate some enthusiasm.
Okay.
I also have another duo that you are familiar with. How about Tim Robinson and Sam Richardson, the Detroiter
Boys? That would never
in
a million years. That would never in a million years happen.
I think it'd be really hilarious.
These two hosts were sneaking in through the TikTok lounge, whatever they will allow us in.
I mean,
you understand how awkward.
Sam has experience hosting the Baby of the Year Awards.
Oh, well, if you put it that way, okay.
I don't know. They're just like the funniest guys out right now. Like, what show is funnier than I Think You Should Leave? And what you need in an award show is like quick, funny bits. And that's what I Think You Should Leave is. I think it kind of would work.
I agree.
I don't know.
I just don't think they'll ever do it.
Yeah, I don't think they'll do it either. Maybe they would consider Aubrey Plaza. She hosted the Indie Spirit Awards a couple years ago, and I thought was great. I think she's got the right energy for the Golden Globe. She could kind of match the boozier kind of vibe.
Yeah, definitely not the Oscars, though.
Exactly. Somebody else who might be good for the Golden Globes was there last night and is a previous winner. I kind of feel like Rami would be really well-suited for this kind of gig. You know, he's... a cultured guy, but he's also like a very clever stand-up comedian who is extremely comfortable on stage. You know, we saw him last time you were in New York, and he's very good with rolling with the punches. I think he could do crowd work and actually excel in it, not just be like weirdly mean. I don't know. I could see Rami doing it. I'm not sure
Rami
is super into that idea, but
if he'd want to, or if he's big enough, or I guess the push of it. But no, Remy would kill it easily. I think I remember when he first won his first Globe or Emmy, he went up there and he had said, some of you don't even know who I am. Some of you just give me your order on the way up.
Yeah, look, he'd kill it. A good one. Yeah. I just mentioned Nate Bargatze. You know, he's just,
bro, he's
I think
good.
He's a comedian on the rise. And that's the kind of profile that I think these award shows should really be going after.
No, he's had back to back to back really great specials. He's family friendly. I think he's able to bring everybody in and have that edge where if you're not going to go full Ricky Gervais, then you need to at least embody the love and just the normal perspective of these movie campaigns and movie awards and stuff. Because for a lot of people, they don't watch every movie. They don't know all the subculture of stuff. And he kind of brings that Midwestern just perspective. I think he's more Southern, but just that idea of like your regular average viewer who isn't tuning into these things would actually give it a watch.
He could kind of be like an audience surrogate, and I think he would do it in a way that doesn't make it feel like you're being disrespectful to the institution, because he's kind of like he's a charming, sweet guy.
Yeah.
All right, my last two are more leaning into the like messy reputation that the Golden Globes might be trying to leave in the rearview mirror, but I don't know. I still think it's fun. This one isn't a comedian, but I just think that like he would get the spectacle and the kind of celebrity centric nature of the night. I honestly think that Andy Cohen would be all right. It's not who I would choose, but if we're choosing between Joe Coy and Andy Cohen, I know who would do a better job.
You know, I had a New Year's resolution. And that was to not see him until the next New Year's Eve thing. So thank you for bringing him up 360-some days.
Look, I still got you got plenty of time to not see his face. I think the next person, though, you'll be a better fan of. Because if we're talking about the Ricky Gervais legacy, who better than Z-Way? Somebody who knows how to put celebrities into uncomfortable spots and do it in a way that is still funny, I think. I think she would be a great inheritor to that Ricky Gervais legacy and somebody who kind of can make it fresh, too.
I want to. I do.
Yeah.
But those are private. Half the time you can, if you turn up the volume on the back speakers, the guest got her people laughing more than she's got the people laughing. So I'm very curious how she would be on a live actual performance, because we've always just seen her on a set. Hell yeah, I would love it. That'd be hilarious.
Yeah. I don't know. I think that would be a pretty good comparison, especially like she can have her stuff pre-written, you know. I hopefully she can manage in the moment.
I hope.
I don't know. And I think she's just much better suited to stuff like this than talking to George Santos, if we're serious. But those are the people who I think would be good for the Golden Globes. The five choices I have for the Oscars, I'm starting with somebody we just talked about earlier, John Mulaney, as well as Nick Kroll, who were excellent.
I'll take Mulaney.
They were excellent as co-hosts of the Indie Spirit Awards. So I'm hoping they can bring back that energy. They've just got a good partnership, comedic partnership. And Mulaney in particular, I think, would be great for that kind of a gig.
Get Mulaney up in the front. He could do the coat check in the back.
Yeah. You mentioned one of your favorite presenters of the night was Ray Romano. I kind of think he could take the reins for a whole ceremony. You know, he has a long storied career as a stand-up comedian, so he's comfortable delivering jokes on stage. He's also somebody who has graduated into the film world and has, you know, some real bona fides as an actor on his under his belt. I think he'd be really fun in that kind of a role.
And committed to that bit completely. They were the best ones. It had a full first, second, and third act to that presentation. It was beautiful. Mm-hmm. That's how it used to be done.
This is maybe similar to the Kristen Wiig, Will Ferrell suggestion, but I'm going to go with Maya Rudolph. I kind of don't know why this hasn't happened already. She is so like effortlessly funny and multi-talented, and she's got connections to the film world. You know, she's Paul Thomas Anderson's wife. That alone should be enough to get her some Oscar cred, right? I think she'd be really... I feel like she tends to do her presentations with people. Like there's the famous one with Tiffany Haddish. There's the famous one with Kristen Wiig. Maybe you pair her up with somebody, but I think you just gotta like just get her at least, no?
Her and Paul.
Oh, I'd love that. You know, I would love that. Straight I'm not sure Paul would love that.
That'd be hilarious.
Yeah. I think Andy Samberg would be good at it. He did the Emmys back in 2019 with the Lonely Island team producing for him. And I think he's got, like, again, talking about the whole idea of short-form comedy being a good training ground for something like this. He's got good bits. And I think...
Yeah, I actually like that, yeah. That'd be good.
That's what you need for a role like this. So I think he'd succeed at it. And then my last choice is maybe a bit of an old school choice, but I'm just mostly surprised it hasn't happened yet. Why has Conan O'Brien never hosted the Oscars? Is there like a more effortlessly smart and clever man out there? Like his podcast is just a gem.
Killing it.
And I don't know, man. I think that he would be so incredible in the role, but he's never really got the shot.
Nah, I mean, that's my favorite late night guy ever.
Yeah.
Easily.
Same. For sure. Same.
All in.
So we're going with Z-Way for the Golden Globes and Conan for the Oscars?
Z-Way and Conan O'Brien to host everything from the Emmys down to the Grammys.
There you go.
And we need a new Grammys one too, bro. I can't keep seeing Trevor Noah at the Grammys.
Yeah, there's a reason I didn't put him on my long list. But
dear.
Anyway, so those are my suggestions. One, yeah.
Don Cheadle has no business being as funny as he is. I'm going to tell you right now, run it back. He set up Kate Beckinsale to say that final line.
There's a few people who I think need to be presenters at every single award ceremony. I think that Will Ferrell and Kristen Wiig need to be at every ceremony. They should bring back Billy Crystal for every Oscars to present something. Mm-hmm. Don Cheadle is like close to that status. He's so good in a deadpan delivery.
He is the best, and he's actually underrated. He is up there with. He's better than some comedians, dude. I have no other way to put it.
Yeah.
I think like the way Regina Hall commits to a bit.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's a great comparison.
He has had viral moments where people think that it's real. He's the funniest one. He's great.
All right, so let us know who you think would be a good host for the Golden Globes, for the Oscars, maybe just somebody you want to see present, or if you had any thoughts on the Golden Globes. Are there any other things that we should talk about before we move to a few other award stories? We didn't mention that Boy and the Heron beat Spider-Verse for animated film. We kind of skipped over to Debicki and the Crown, but I don't know. I'm not watching The Crown.
Was good in The Crown. I mean, I know that she... We had mentioned that. I remember you were going through everybody in that category, and I was like, bro, there's someone from The Crown in here. She's going to take it. Good for Debicki. You know, she started off as doing a lot of supporting stuff, and I think it's still supporting, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah. But with award recognition, yeah. I'd just say overall, some of the stats, and Oppenheimer being the one with the most wins movie-wise, 5 to all the other movies doing 2. So that's pretty impressive right there.
Notable.
Hopefully stays the same. Succession, obviously coming out on top with 9 over the second place being The Bear and Only Murders with 5 each. But just overall, I think they did a really good job in presenting a lot of the categories. In terms of the presenters, you had a lot of hit or misses, but the ones that were recognizable were pretty recognizable. Yeah, I think that's pretty much it, unless you had something else to say for the holdovers, because when it comes down to the top two, the last category to really break down is Killian versus Paul Giamatti.
Yeah, I mean, those seem to be the front runners, at least for now, heading into the Oscars. And it's hard for me to choose personally, because I feel like such a warmth towards both those actors. And I don't know, it's feels like...
What you say today will be the truth. Speak it.
I'm going to go with Paul Giamatti. I think Paul earned it. This is similar to what my argument was with Robert Downey Jr. is a nice mix of, it feels like it's time to award this guy, and also this is like one of his iconic performances. It's so Paul Giamatti in his bag that I think... Because you don't want Paul Giamatti to win for some random, you know, for some random performance. I was trying to think of like the last thing I've seen Paul Giamatti in, but it's like Billions being, you know, ordered around by a dominatrix. He's not going to win an Oscar for that.
They said he's dating the girl from Billions?
Yeah. Love finds us in the most mysterious ways.
Shout out, Paul.
All right, so let's move on to some other awards topics, starting with the Creative Arts Emmys, which confusingly were also last weekend. It was a bunch of below-the-line awards for Emmys getting doled out, and then above-the-line awards being handed out at the Golden Globes. Several TV shows took home multiple awards, but the big winner on the night was The Last of Us, which took home a total of 8. I think the most notable one, or at least the one that I saw most people celebrating, was Nick Offerman's win for guest actor in a drama series for iconic episode 3. But Art, I don't know if you saw many of these awards or the winners, but did any stand out to you?
I did not get to see many of them, but I know that Deadpool, what's his name, won for Wrexham? Because I saw him my page talking about getting a shout out there. Yeah. An interesting one I'd bring up to you is this idea that the Emmys television gave an award to Still a Michael J. Fox Story, a documentary that has also been shortlisted for the Oscars.
Yeah, I don't really... It's bizarre, right? Because in this weird nether
That's
zone
cheating.
Where like... Is it TV? Is it movies? Is it both? Who's to say? Yeah, I mean, well, the thing is, good they streaming. Did put it in theaters because they need weird. To put it in theaters in order to have an Oscar qualifying run. But does them putting it in theaters For mean sure. that it should then be disqualified from TV awards?
Well, no, because
right.
some
so then what is the series delineation? Now get put what in is the difference?
Theaters as like a special, right? It's
because so, you know, I don't know.
Oh, gosh.
I don't know. It's hard to figure out, like, what the dividing line should be. I know that, to me personally, it feels like cheating, but at the same time, like, it is an award for TV documentary, right? Like, it's not like they're lying about it not being a documentary. They're just sort of lying about it being made for TV.
And it's... Yeah. Where should it count? And the craziest part is that you and I just consider it top 5 no matter what.
Not particularly. I mean, I did find it interesting that The Last of Us did so well. In circling back to our point about Succession and The Bear dominating at the Golden Globes, I do think that there is a world in which the Emmys award The Last of Us instead of Succession. And given that it has a bunch of... You don't think so?
No. That's cute. What?
I don't know, man. The Emmys do some weird shit sometimes.
Sure.
I guess. How weird. But I don't know, man.
That's Succession.
We will see. I'm not saying that that's what I would like bet on, but it's not something that I'm going to be surprised by if it happens.
Okay. What did it clean up with? Just by you were saying Nick Offerman. You were mentioning a couple stuff. How much Succession competition did they have in those categories?
It did beat Succession in casting for a drama series.
Because it was brand new people.
Outstanding contemporary costumes from a series, also against Succession. Oh, wait, did it win those categories? Maybe I'm wrong. I don't think it won those categories. So ignore me. White Lotus and Wednesday won those categories. It won outstanding prosthetic makeup, which it probably did better than Succession.
Well, you know. Maybe.
I don't know. I'm assuming guest actor, there were some Succession people in there, too. It won outstanding visual effects, which, again, is not something that I think it's competing. Yeah, yeah. You know what I was surprised by? Which, again,
Succession probably had down bad.
Outstanding main title design. I was surprised that Nicholas Britell didn't pick up best original music for a TV show. That one went to The White Lotus instead.
And that's wrong. That man for The White Lotus has won way too many awards for that. It's the same beat.
Yeah.
For both
seasons. It's a remix. Like, congrats.
It's a remix.
You dropped the remix.
And I mess with the remix, but Nick Britell comes in every single time. Yeah. He does what Michael Giacchino did with that Lost score, where it's the same notes, but like sad. Same notes, but like thrilling. He's been doing that with the Succession score every single season.
Yeah.
And to see him lose is, you said once for the last four seasons?
Yeah, he won for the season one music, and then he hasn't won again since, which
that's
is crazy
right.
considering that it's
that's
the
not right.
It's some of the best original music made for media ever. Wow. I don't know, man. That's so good. I finally found a category that The Last of Us beat Succession in. Outstanding sound mixing for a comedy or drama series
oh
1 hour.
Oh, my gosh. So now comedies and dramas are the same. Okay.
A shout out to Storm Reed. Pink Sweets is mentioning in the live stream that Storm also won from The Last of Us.
They did not win the guest supporting?
Who won guest?
The brothers in that one episode.
No, it was Nick Offerman who beat all The Last of Us and Succession people. And then it was Storm Reed who again beat a bunch of Last of Us and Succession people.
Okay. Well, I guess they still got the award, but yeah, I would have given it. I guess Nick Offerman had the whole episode to himself, so.
He had a little more room to work with.
Yeah, a little more room. All right, well, that's interesting. Creative Art Emmys. Are those even streamed?
I don't know. I don't think so, but I'd imagine it's 2023 or 2024, creative. Right? They should stream these things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And when are the
they only
uncreative
work in media.
Art Emmys?
Those are next week.
Next week, okay.
Yeah.
Tune in.
The Oscars also announced some shortlists.
Oh, let's go.
Yeah, the shortlists for 10 different categories, including a couple that we pay significant attention to, those being documentary feature, international feature, some more that we will get into, but I do want to start with those two big ones. Documentaries, they named 15 movies to the shortlist. Those movies include American Symphony, Apollonia, Beyond Utopia, The Eternal Memory, Four Daughters, Going to Mars, The Nikki Giovanni Story, Stamped from the Beginning, Still a Michael J. Fox Story, A Still Small Voice, 32 Sounds, 20 Days in Mariupol, and four other documentaries that we haven't mentioned on Intercut. If you've been paying attention to Intercut, you knew 11 of them.
In the rear view I mentioned?
Take one off. To Kill a Tiger, in the rear view, Desperate Souls, Dark City, and The Legend of Midnight Cowboy, and then Bobby Wine, The People's President.
Beautiful.
Yeah, so those are the 15 movies that have been shortlisted for documentary, and I guess we talked about 12 of them on the last year of the show. Not bad. That's pretty solid for a track record.
Hey, I'll say I mentioned Bobby Wine, the People's President, and I said I didn't see it. So I'm going to count my top five.
Yeah, shoot.
Four Daughters, Going to Mars. Still Michael J. Fox. A Still Small Voice. 20 Days of Mariupol. Those are my picks.
I've got a just very personal. Similar top five. I went with The Eternal Memory over Going to Mars, the Nikki Giovanni story, just because I felt fair. Like while I really liked Going to Mars, I think I liked her, the subject, more than the necessarily structure or presentation of the documentary, whereas Eternal Memory, I think I like the filmmaking a little bit more there. Mm-hmm. But I also have Four Daughters, still a Michael J. Fox story, a Still Small Voice, and 20 Days in Mariupol in my final five.
Beautiful. My sneakers would be American Symphony and In the Rear View. I can see In the Rear View getting in there for sure. Yeah.
I thought you also really liked Apollonia a bunch.
That was pretty good. I'm surprised yeah. we made it this way. I'm excited because that was like one of the first ones that I put on for Tribeca. And I was yeah. like, damn, look at you make it all the way. 32 yeah, yeah. Sounds. Don't even get it twisted. I don't know if you remember this documentary.
I do.
South by 2022.
Yeah.
That's 2 years after the fact. That's mm-hmm. one where the movie begins and it tells you to put on headphones because the whole movie is supposed to be a sonic adventure. Very interesting movie. Crazy to see it here after wait, all
was
these
this...
years.
Was that South by or was it Sundance? Because I feel like I remember us booting it up on Alina's laptop.
I remember catching it at South by. It could have played at Sundance as one of the...
Because that was like the Harry VR Potter house stuff. Year. Yeah.
Yeah. If it was that year, it would have been even before. Actually, you're right. It might have been there.
Yeah.
I just remember seeing it a part of South by.
Any documentaries that you feel were snubbed? I know there's a few that we both enjoyed from this year or at least appreciated. I'll start with De Humani Corporis Fabrica, the film that I most wanted to walk out of, but only because it was so affecting and disgusting to watch its depiction of the human body. I don't know. It's a stunning piece of filmmaking. I kind of think it at least should have been shortlisted. Also, yeah. We both found King Cole to be really powerful and ethereal and mysterious and beautiful. I would have liked to seen that one shortlisted. I think the biggest snub for me is Kokomo City, just a vibrant documentary everyone, that depicts yeah. the lives of black trans sex workers. A really, really great documentary. And then I also really liked Smoke Sauna Sisterhood, which is from Estonia. And I think is incredibly powerful in the way that it's put together.
Yeah. I mean, you know me. I got so many I can mention. Great Photo, Lovely Life was the last minute one that we yeah. saw off HBO. Incredible, fantastic movie. Put that on your radar if you have not. I agree with you on Smoke Sauna Sisterhood. I'm going to double that up with Against the Tide, a movie that I think got like shortlisted before mm-hmm. it got completely kicked out. I thought that was a very good one. Kokomo City, I agree with you, and I would even put in All These Sons, the newest one from one of your favorite documentarian filmmakers. Oh. Who had done, what was it, Minding the Gap?
Yeah,
was
Bing Liu.
Whenever it's, I want to say that this one is available on Prime. Perfect.
Yeah. Is that this year or is that last year? I forget All These Stunts.
It barely got released 2023. We got to see it as a part of some festival, I can't remember, in 2022. It had a very slow release because you won't believe it.
Yeah.
House Made of Splinters 2023 as well. The
oh,
one
geez.
That had me crying at the Harry Potter yeah. house. Yeah, there's some so many movies that are out there. I agree with you with De Omani. You remember Riotsville? That barely yeah. got its release last
You're
year.
You're right.
A movie made up of all archive footage about a Riotsville, USA, a city mm-hmm. just made up of test subjects to be able to run what it would be like if the military, the government had to deal with a riot
uprisings and riots
yeah,
and,
yeah. It's right there. Fantastic Machine I thought was also a really good one from last
yeah.
year. I thought that was could have gotten some love. Dear Mama, I know after the year that is OJ Made in America, they won't count docuseries anymore.
Yeah,
but boy should this have counted. I'd even put another docuseries up there, right? I've been seeing it win like documentary award shows, so shout out to Dear Mama for that. American Gladiators would have fit there as well, but the final one, and I know you would agree with me, and I know you think this should be in the short list, if not the top five. Hot Potato, the Story of the Wiggles. There's no reason why this is being snubbed.
I mean, it's one of the movies that maybe they'll laugh the most this year, at the very least. So.
A lot of great documentary picks, but yeah, that was some of my picks.
Let's talk about the shortlisted international movies. They are Amerikazi from Armenia, The Monk and the Gun from Bhutan, The Promised Land from Denmark, fallen leaves from Finland, the taste of things from France, the teacher's lounge from Germany, Godland from Iceland, Yo Capitano from Italy, Perfect Days from Japan, Totem from Mexico, The Mother of All Lies from Morocco, Society of the Snow from Spain, Four Daughters from Tunisia, getting onto both shortlists, 20 Days in Mariupol from Ukraine, also getting onto both shortlists, and The Zone of Interest from the United Kingdom. So of those 15 movies, I believe we again talked about 12 of them this year on Intercut. But do you have a top five that you're hoping to see actually make the final cut at the Oscars?
Barring the movies I haven't been able to see yet, I'm going Promised Land, Teacher's Lounge, Godland, Society of the Snow. The heck, bro? Four Daughters, 20 Days, Zone of Interest. Woo!
Not easy.
Wow. Not easy. Zone, 20 Days.
Nice, nice. I think I am going to go with The Taste of Things, Teacher's Lounge, Perfect Days, mm-hmm. Totem, and The Zone of Interest. I think three of my picks you haven't seen.
Yeah, I'm still sitting on Perfect Days, Totem,
Taste of Things,
and Mother of All Lies we're going to see at Sundance, bro. Like,
oh, yeah, true. That's another one that I haven't seen. I want to catch up with Yo Capitano. I saw that was nominated at the Globes last night. You said excellent things about Godland and The Promised Land as well. Amerikazi is the only one of these that I hadn't even heard of until the nominations
I mentioned it to you.
Did you mention it?
Yeah, so again, make it 13, bro. I got you.
Okay, I'll always sneak in there.
I left a comedy show and went straight to go see Amerikazi. I'm but surprised you made it this far.
Yeah, you don't have any final five. Well, there's always a couple.
None of my final five.
There's always a couple surprising ones. I think some people were surprised by The Monk and The Gun, although it has the same director as Lunana, A Yak in the Classroom, which made the final five. So,
I understood that one.
It's just Bhutan, we still didn't catch right? It's such a tiny country, but, you know, people are responding to the movie or at least the campaign.
They cooked the pure stuff over there. We still got to catch that one.
So those are the international and documentary shortlists. The snubs from international that I had listed were Delinquents from Argentina, ooh, Pictures of Ghosts from Brazil, The Settlers, which just got released in theaters. That's Chile's selection. I wanted to also specifically mention Mami Wata from Nigeria, which, you know, if it had been shortlisted, it would have been the only African film shortlisted. Africa is one of the continents that the Academy is particularly bad at recognizing films from. And most people I know who have seen Mami Wata find the film to be pretty incredible. Do not expect too much from The End of the World. I know you caught this one and thought it was pretty. There's a lot to really like about it, even if there's a lot.
The one she drives?
Yeah, yeah. That's Romania's selection. Yeah. Concrete Utopia from South Korea and About Dry Grasses from Turkey, I know got rave reviews out of festivals.
Yeah. Did you mention Shada?
I didn't mention Shada. Was that Australia's pick? I think it was.
Yeah, that is Australia's pick. It's getting a good amount. I went to go see Memory. I forgot to add that to the lineup for Wigamon's Watch. And it was just full of a bunch of trailers for the festival. Movies. They had a really good trailer for Shada that a lot of people were reacting to. Some of the other ones that I'd mention here from the other list. Promised Land did make the cut. Taste of Things I need to see. Smoke Sauna Sisterhood was technically also a submission.
From Estonia.
For its country, which I thought was pretty cool. I'm glad Godland made it in. The Night Guard. Oh, Inshallah Boy. I just got a screener link for that is also getting its theatrical release from Jordan, which, as you were saying, many of the African movies just don't get picked. It's not even African, I guess. Slow from Lithuania, you know, was a standout for me out of Sundance. But where is that out? You can't really find that with the way that they released that way too tiny. Housekeeping for Beginners, massive trailer before Memory as well. Another one that I had missed out of Chicago, but that one looked really good. Songs of Earth was a documentary. Bye Bye Tiberius from Palestine, which has the actress from Succession. It's her daughter directing her and her sisters. You're a little muted. But I thought that one was a pretty good standout. The Peasants is one that's on my anticipated list. I just finished The Breaking Ice. That was a really good movie as well. That would have been Singapore submission from Anthony Chen. And
I have a screening of The Peasants tomorrow. That's Poland selection. I'll report back.
Bruh, please, yeah. Because that thing looks crazy. You know. It's like one of those, the not Xenotrope, but like Rotoscope. Yeah. Thank you. That looks pretty good. And then just rounding it out over here, South Korea's Concrete Utopia in theaters now.
Yeah.
Decent. Sudan's Goodbye Julia. That would have been mine. I came out talking good things about that one. I really liked the performances there. Four Daughters had the ability. I think both of us are still watching About Dry Grasses because that one's pretty long. And that's it. Yeah. Out of the ones that were there. So, look, still solid list for the bunch because I don't know who to add. Someone's going to get cut out for the top five. So it's already going to be
definitely
down to the wire.
Are you interested in talking about any of the other short lists? Because, you know, they have the short films, short lists are out, although, you know, those are often full of surprise films that we hadn't heard about. Although sometimes they do include ones that we've been talking about. There's mm-hmm. the short list for makeup and hairstyling, for sound, for original score, for original song, which tragically did not include Camp Isn't Home from Theater Camp.
I don't get that. It makes no sense to me.
Yeah, Theater Camp in general, just overlooked this year.
Yeah. I'm surprised on, I guess, the Flora and Song. Flora and Sun song was decent. I was still going for Dublin 07. But hey, some love there at least. When it comes to some of the shorts, I know for a fact there's a one called Grandma and Grandma. That's one that I'm rooting for the most. I thought that one was pretty good. We also have the director making a new movie over at Sundance. When it comes to visual effects, I found this to be the most interesting because it's been a conversation that's been had since the summer. Oppenheimer getting booted out of here because they don't consider it special effects, I think is goofy.
Mm-hmm.
I think it deserves a spot on here. I wonder
how much of that is like a kind of political thing because of
I could toss
how
off much four.
Nolan has been talking about how this is all practical or primarily That's practical.
That's still a visual effect. That is still a visual effect. Mm-hmm. If there is no category for the practical effect, then that is a visual effect.
Right, but we know what dominates this category. And it's the best, it's basically a best CGI category, even though that's not the title.
Then rename it.
Yeah.
Then rename it.
Perhaps. Yeah. Perhaps, yeah.
That would be the last thing that I throw in there. Rebel Moon? Come on now. No.
Did want to mention that the short film list is a little bit more auteur filled than normal because Wes Anderson's The Wonderful World of Henry Sugar made the cut, as did Pedro Almodovar's Strange Way of Life. So those two iconic directors might be getting another Oscar nomination in the shorts category in a week's time.
Interesting.
All right. We'll wrap up this awards update with a quick discussion of the ruling on Barbie's script. Because despite
the verdict has just come in.
It's the final result has come through, and Barbie will be competing as an adapted screenplay despite Warner Brothers attempting to run it in the original screenplay category, which of course set off a world of debate and hair wringing from Oscar pundits.
The Art, UN gathered.
Art, we know that Barbie is based on previous material. Yes. We know that it is adapted from the Mattel line of toys. Part of the reason we know it's adapted is because the movie says so in its credits. However, I do kind of want to throw an argument out at you. Is this script any less original than May December or Origin or Air?
It is through and through an adaptation of the dresses, of the costumes, of the house. It is literally adapting what we know this doll to be. May December, switch the names. It is making fun of the genre more than it is making fun of the case because that's the only way they got away with that poor boy coming out, now a man, saying, that offended me. Air is bastardization. That is a corporate document. That is corporate. Zach, I'm going to take your Air. Origin, I see two other movies that you mentioned there if you want to mention them. I am saying all of these are adapted before I say I'm the complete opposite of you. You're mentioning movies that I'd boot over there with it before I say that this should be original.
All the movies that I mentioned, May, December, Air, and Origin, you think should be in the adapted category?
I'd put those in the adapted if that's the argument over this getting by as original.
I mean, the other argument that I have is that is this screenplay less original than something like 1917 or something like Dunkirk, which is rooted in historical fact, and where you talk about how we come in with this idea of like what the clothes are, what the characters are, what the dolls are, how we come in and we know it's funny that there's only one Alan because we know that it's about Barbie and Ken. Don't we also know who wins in the end in 1917 and in Dunkirk?
They asked for the rights and the copyrights of the soldiers' outfits and military personnel. At what point are we stopping what adapted is then? If everything is new, then everything is new. If there's no adapted, that's fine. We can Golden Globes it. But to me, it is through and through adapting what we know Barbie to be.
Mm-hmm. I brought this up the last time we sort of talked about this on the show, but I think what I would love to see is and part of this is because I just love screenplays and writers and I want them to be rewarded, a third kind of hybrid category where it's like original ideas based off of existing properties. Because like,
isn't that adapted screenplay?
I don't think so though, because they're like, you look, I read Poor Things, right? And they're lifting lines of dialogue from the book directly into the mouths of the characters. Even something like Oppenheimer is pretty faithfully following a lot of the stuff in American Prometheus, but there's like there is a completely original story in Barbie. It is built off of the back of unoriginal characters and properties, but there is still an amount of originality to it. Let's take Barbie away from the discussion. What about something like Across the Spider-Verse? Which is wholly original idea adapted off of... How about How to Blow Up a Pipeline? Which is a completely original story based off of a nonfiction book.
Adapted. Why is it so bad to be adapted? That's my question.
It's not bad to be adapted. I'm just saying that there's...
But the urge is you think that they deserve more respect by having it original.
No. It's not about more respect. It's about different delineations of the job, because I think particularly in the modern spectrum of Hollywood, this is an increasingly large part of what a writer's job is to like take something that exists and find an original angle on it. And I think it's different than taking the book of women talking and basically just like transmogrifying it into a film where like 98% of it is basically the same words than doing what you're doing in something like Barbie. And I think those things are also completely different than having a completely original screenplay where everything comes from scratch. I just think they're all different and they all kind of could get their own little box, right? Like we don't put in TV, we do this more, right? The Emmys have so many different categories for best short form comedy, best late night comedy, best 30 minute comedy. I'm saying we need more categories.
I am always for more categories, but at the end of the day, it's either something's original like Past Lives.
Yeah.
Or something is adapted from something, whether it be small.
Well, she adapted Past tiny. Lives off of her real life experience, so maybe we should do another category.
I like that one. If it's been copywritten and milled, I don't think it's bad for it to be adapted. Yeah. I think everything you described, I agree. There are layers to the adaptation, for sure.
Yeah.
But at the same time, some may argue that Star Wars shouldn't be original back in the day. But it was the first original take on that world.
Yeah,
That's the difference to me between Mattel. When Black Panther was getting all of its nominations, that's still adapted. I think because we like Greta so much, we're rooting for it to be something outside of what the movie is. That's why I keep bringing up Transformers. This is a better movie than Transformers, but it's the same model. A toy movie that took what it's supposed to be for its demographic and made it something big. For the boys, it was what Michael Bay had, right? For Greta, it was something a little bit more nuanced. And that nuance that she gave the character, we love so much. We want it to be original. But it's that same work. You brought up Little Women, a great point. Yes, that's more from the text, but she flipped it. And I think she did the exact same work with what we know culturally of Barbie and then Masterful works with it, but it's still adapted. I don't think that's a bad thing. I think she should sweep it. I felt it was adapted from the beginning. I'll take the extra category, sure. I'll take it. I don't mind it. But
yeah, look, I agree with you. Like it is adapted. I think the movie agrees with you too, right? And that is, there is a talent in finding originality within your adaptation, right? Like there are different types and styles of adaptation, and I think that it's okay for them to compete against each other. I just think it'd be fun to have more nominees, but in the case that we can't, yeah, dude, it should be an adapted. It's not. It has a leg up against the original screenplays that are starting everything from scratch. We already have some familiarity with it.
Where are you putting A24's Death Stranding?
I mean, that talk about new categories. That whole movie that's deserves its own category. Best walking simulator.
That's experience.
So I think that just about does it for our awards wrap up, but let us know your thoughts on all these different topics. And if you think that any movie in particular is a front runner at the Oscars and why it might not be Oppenheimer, I think it's going to be Oppenheimer.
Killers.
Art, just want to remind everybody that if you want to support our show, you can head over to patreon.com/intercutpod, where you can sign up to be a patron. You can support the show, or you can even just follow along for free to get updates about the show. But if you do become a paid member, you will get access to some early Intercut videos, some patron exclusive videos like our recent talk with Amanda the Jedi about our 2023 Letterboxd stats. You'll also get invitations to our monthly Google patron meetings, which are always a fun time. So head over to patreon.com/intercutpod to check out all of that. But that's about it for this edition of the show. Art, where can people find more from you?
You can find me over at LME Movies, logging everything on Letterboxd, tweeting nothing on Twitter, or over at Let Me Explain on YouTube.com, where I'll be posting hopefully a lot more, especially as we get into Sundance and a bunch of other things. But either way, you can always catch me here weekly on the Intercut Podcast.
And you can catch more from me at Zshevich or at Multiplex Show on YouTube or TikTok. But find more from Intercut across social media at Intercut Pod, whatever you like to use. We're probably on there. You can also watch us on YouTube, youtube.com/intercutpod, or listen to us on whatever your favorite podcatcher is. And hey, while you're there, maybe give us a 5-star review. We really like those 5-star reviews. I mean, they make me feel good. And if you just kind of want to, like, give me a little shot of dopamine, it's pretty easy.
Sometimes I'll leave one on there, just 5 stars, because I know it's going to brighten his day.
I just appreciate it so much.
Leave a 1-star review.
And I don't want you to tell me which ones they are, because that would really complicate our relationship.
All the ones from Tunisia, those are all me. I use the VPN.
So please leave us those 5-star reviews, and please, if you're watching the video, leave a comment, like the video, consider heading over or consider subscribing. I already said all of that. If you're
do it again.
Also subscribe. It doesn't hurt to remind people to subscribe. You can turn on the bell. I normally don't say the, like, oh, you can click the bell for notifications
that would have changed it. That's
what's wrong. been wrong all these years. I figured it out only 4 hours into recording today.
It's okay. New year, new rule. We got this.
Yeah, hit, new us, right?
Smash that bell. That's what it is.
Smash that bell. Like our Facebook, our Instagram, our Twitter pages. Support our Patreon. You find all of them at Intercut Pod. And those are the best places to get updates throughout the week from Arturo, from me, from any of the guests that we feature here on Intercut. You can also catch a link to our Discord in the description of this episode, which is a great place to keep up the talk all week long with a bunch of inner cuties. Thanks again for tuning in, and until next time, be better than Joe Coy. Just be more prepared than Joe Coy.